This week in Retronauts, a different kind of Toon Link. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the third episode of Retronauts Radio. It's me, Jeremy Parrish, and this week it's a different kind of Retronauts Radio because sitting across from me in a studio is none other than...
Rock-a-doodle-doo, you're listening to Bob and Jeremy on Retronauts Radio.
I think
call
it has
in
to be
now
like...
for tickets to Mario Speedwagon. I'm sorry.
Mario Speedwagon?
Mario Speedwagon. It's been a long recording weekend, and I wanted to get that joke in.
Nice. Yes. Usually Retronauts Radio, I mean, I say usually, there have been two episodes so far, is me talking solo over a bunch of music, talking about new, old game music releases. But there wasn't really that much to talk about this month, so I decided to mix things up. And since I'm here with Bob in San Francisco recording stuff, and he likes game music, it seemed natural to
That's
have
all
him
I listen
join
to
in.
Anymore. I'm out of touch with my fellow humans.
That's right. That's the way it should be. So this week, or this episode, this month, we're going to talk a little bit about a single new release, and then we're going to do kind of a retrospective on a type of music, a genre of music, I don't know, a category of music. So it'll be a little different than usual, but hopefully you'll enjoy it and find it worthwhile. So without further ado, let's just jump in. So the one music release that I want to focus on this month is one that just came out in Japan and was released actually a few days later in America. I don't know if it's an actual U.S. release or if it just showed up on Amazon through importers, but
is it expensive?
Is,
that's the way to tell.
It costs about the same as it does in Japan.
Oh, interesting.
Actually.
Okay.
So there's no big markup. It's actually maybe like... slightly more expensive than the Japanese version, and when you add in like express shipping from Japan, it turns out to be about the same. So I picked up the Japanese version not knowing it was coming to the US. It's all music though, and there's no words. Actually, that's not true. There are some words, but not a lot of words. So it all amounts to the same. Music is the universal language. Anyway, this is The Legend of Zelda 30th Anniversary Concert CD. This is a recording of a concert that was performed in various places in Japan. This was the Tokyo recording, conducted by Taizo Takemoto with the Tokyo Philharmonic Orchestra. And I guess this is now a Nintendo series that they're doing, like an annual series, the anniversary series.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky enough to have gone to two of these concerts for the 25th anniversary of Legend of Zelda. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I wrote about this for 1UP, but it's long gone now. But the first one in LA was the debut of this Legend of Zelda concert series. And it was I loved being there. It was a great privilege. But the audience was terrible.
Oh.
And it was like I felt like I didn't want to kill anyone's fun, but I was just like, I know you like this song. Just please stop hooting and hollering.
Yeah,
I just want to hear the music.
Behave in an orchestra.
Yeah, but then I saw it in SF at the SF Symphony or whatever, San Francisco, by the way. And everyone was well behaved, and I got to hear hear all the music, and that's when they started putting in Majora's Mask music into the rotation. So that made up for it. Like, I still enjoyed myself at that LA concert, but I felt like and this is a message to all of you fans out there. There's a time to cheer and clap at an orchestra, but during the music is not that time.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's just my bitter scold coming out on this show.
Fortunately, this was performed in Tokyo, so there was no question about behavior.
There's very polite clapping after all the songs are over. Yeah.
But like I was saying, this is part of a series that they're doing evidently now, like an anniversary series, not just with Zelda, but a follow-up to the concert that I went to in 2015, which was the Super Mario Brothers 30th anniversary concert.
Was that in Japan?
It was also – yeah. It was a few places in Japan. I saw it like the last night of its performance in Tokyo. And I have to say that I actually enjoyed the Mario concert a lot more. And it's not just because I was there at the concert. I mean, obviously being there present for live music is always amazing. But I just feel like it was more interesting and distinct. This is you know, Zelda, so it's orchestration. It's, you know, very like classical music. Whereas Mario was much more about interpretations and different different stylistic approaches. Lots of, you know, rock, lots of that sort of salsa music or the jazz big band kind
reggae
of style.
Things creeping in.
A little bit of reggae, yeah. It was more diverse. And also the drummer was like this 18-year-old girl who just was like completely kicking ass. And I was just amazed to watch her. You know, the Zelda 30th anniversary concert is good. And like I said, because it's Zelda, they really went with a sort of classical orchestrated style. And the arrangements are really solid, you know, but they all stick to a very specific genre, a very specific type of music. So just kind of be warned if you're, you know, going to pick this up. It's two CDs of orchestral arrangements performed live of Zelda music. So if that's what you're after, then this is pretty great. And it does qualify as a Retronauts cover topic because it goes all the way back to the original Zelda. So it's 30 years of music wrapped up into a single concert. So what did you think of it, Bob?
I enjoyed it, but like you said, this is like – I feel like I'm being ungrateful, but I have heard these songs orchestrated many times over the past, I don't know, 15, possibly 20 years. And I think I do prefer the medleys more than I do the individual tracks because it is a collection of the songs I enjoy, not just like here is this, here is that. It's like here is the Wind Waker suite. And in terms of that kind of arrangement, I love medleys when it comes to video game music just because it's a sampling of all of the very iconic themes. But I do enjoy all of these, but some of them I've heard a lot, like Hyrule Castle, Zelda's theme. I do appreciate things like the 3DS medley when they pull from like Spirit Tracks, things like that. That's always interesting to me. But again, these are all very solid songs. I just feel spoiled that like I've heard orchestrated versions so many times in my life.
That's interesting because I found myself liking the medleys much less than the the standard arrangements of just, you know, individual tracks or a few tracks, because it always kind of bothers me when you have medleys where it's just like it's a little snippet of a piece of music and then it's a different piece of music and then it's a different piece of music and a different piece of music, and there's no real connection between them. There's no sort of development or reiteration.
I see. It wasn't that jarring to me, but I can see how some people probably would enjoy that. I feel they find a way to stitch them together. I don't know. I'm not listening that closely, but I wasn't like, oh, that was abrupt, like the jump cut of music.
No, it's not that it's abrupt. It's just that, you know, like it's not, what you're hearing at the beginning is not thematically similar or connected at all to what you're hearing at the end.
For me, it was like I love the Wind Waker's music probably more than any other Zelda games, and I just liked hearing all of the very interesting themes from that instead of just the Wind Waker theme. I was like, oh, good, we get to hear the Pirates theme and this theme and that theme. Like I was just on board for more music from the games I like, really.
Yeah, I think in my case, you know, the first episode of Retronauts Radio, I covered the Tokyo Symphonic Fantasy, which had some really, really phenomenal arrangements of Final Fantasy music from Final Fantasy VI and VII. Mm. And they really did put a lot of thought into taking, you know, multiple pieces of music and connecting them in a way that made them feel like it's not a medley. It is a, you know, like a new composition that all fits together cohesively and thematically. So I guess that's
a better
version.
I'm
comparing to. Like these arrangements are nowhere near as inventive or considered as the Tokyo Symphonic Fantasy, but you know, this was that's fine. This was just a single, like a 2 week concert series.
Yeah.
So,
and also when you're watching, when you're at these concerts, there is a visual component, and I think it's sold much. But these medleys are sold much better with that visual component, mm-hmm. where you're seeing footage of the games, and they do clever things to transition between them. So I feel like you could be missing that part of it if you're not seeing it in action, for sure.
I do appreciate the fact that the album opens not with the Zelda theme, you know, the Legend of Zelda main theme, but rather with the Hyrule Castle theme, because that is, you say you're a little tired of it, but I don't know that I've heard an actual proper arrangement of this, and it's so it's like this pompous, brassy, very kind of grandiose theme, and it's a good start to the album. It really kicks it off in a very, like, here's what you're in for. You're in for orchestra.
I have heard it before. I'm not sure where, but it is the one song I think from Link to the Past is not remixed enough. You don't really hear it that often in the game, just in one location, mm-hmm. maybe twice. When you start the game, then when you go back to rescue Zelda before the Dark World happens. So, and it's a theme I do enjoy when I hear it.
I like that it, you know, goes immediately from the big, pompous Hyrule Castle to Zelda's theme, which is much more delicate. The only theme that is actually more delicate is the Great Fairy theme, which kind of comes toward the very end, right before the rousing finale. So I guess these two tracks sort of serve the same purpose. They're sort of like a counterpoint to the bookend pieces.
That makes
sense.
So
they're like the inner layers on the bookends. I think I like the Great Fairy theme a little more because it's literally just a harp and a female chorus kind of chanting wordlessly.
Yeah, they do
and
a lot with
really nice.
A very simple melody that's just meant to be sort of background music.
But you mentioned that you like the Wind Waker music a lot.
I do.
More than any other Zelda game. So what is it about that that you enjoy, and what is it you find great about this medley?
I feel like out of all the Zelda games, the Wind Waker's music is meant to personify the characters. It reminds me of a lot of things like LucasArts Adventure Games and things like that, where the music is not just for the scene or for the setting, but it's meant to give personality. So, like, I just immediately think of the Pirates theme. I immediately think of Windfall Island theme. But they very much personify the characters that the song will be playing, around. And I do love the overworld theme. In that case, the over ocean theme. I think it is the best Zelda overworld theme. Mm. I get so sick of hearing the Zelda main theme that gets reused a lot, but they do a very, like, very soaring, very rousing rendition of it for the game. I really feel like that's a great version of that song, a great version of that melody, and hearing it in an orchestra is very, makes me feel good. I just love hearing that.
Yeah, speaking of the main theme, that's actually the final track in this CD, and I don't really like this arrangement of it. I thought it was really – it was very unsatisfying.
I actually this is a deep cut, but there is a 2003 CD called – I think it's called Zelda and Mario Big Band.
Mm-hmm.
If you look for some arrangement of those words, you'll find it on YouTube. It's every song is free on YouTube at this point, every video game song. But it has a really good – I love the Wind Waker main theme. Are you talking about the harp intro?
No.
Or
I'm talking about like the Legend of Zelda main theme. No, I'm talking about the final track on this, which is the Legend of Zelda, you know. Do, 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 do. This version, it like builds up and almost kind of comes to a crescendo and then drops down
huh.
and brings in a different arrangement. And then that starts to build up. And then it never really reaches that musical climax that you expect. And it's very frustrating.
Is that because it's meant to loop and there's no way to...
No, they actually weave in a couple of different
okay.
takes on the main theme, but... They do it in a way that the arrangement never really reaches a proper climax. And it's a really, I don't know, I actually kind of think it's a bad way for the entire concert to end because you kind of want some sort of like big final show off, send off to end the show. And this doesn't do that.
I'm trying to think of how the previous concerts I attended ended and I don't remember which song they went out on.
Do you have a favorite?
Actually, the first concert in LA, which had a bad audience, but the saving grace of that, alongside hearing this great Zelda music, was Koji Kondo coming out to play a song on the piano, and it's not the song you think he would play. He played Grandma's theme from The Wind Waker.
Nice.
So again, one of those themes from The Wind Waker that really personifies a character. It really is supposed to make you feel homesick, make you feel like it's a very melancholy, but the feelings of love and care in that song, and I really love that song.
Thank you. Yeah, I like that this this arrangement or this concert album does have a few sort of unexpected tracks. The 30th anniversary symphony track kind of hits every single game. But what really impressed me about it is that it opens up with the palace theme from The Legend of Zelda 2.
Right, yeah.
Which is not a piece I expected to hear at all. There's not really much Zelda 2 music accounted for on this this album. But to have the palace theme in there is a really great start. And then it shifts around to a bunch of different games. And again, that doesn't have a real sense of cohesion to it, but it starts off so strong that I kind of don't mind. I like hearing that music.
It is the best song from Zelda 2, for sure, I think.
Yeah.
And it's the one I hear the most, like in Smash Brothers and other arrangements, people remixing it. Yeah.
And there's also the minor songs medley immediately after that. I mean, I honestly feel like these two could have been just a single suite, like a 20-minute suite.
Mm.
But maybe it's just as well that they kind of took a break. But the minor songs medley has all kinds of stuff like just, random little pieces and snippets of like the Lost Worlds theme or Lost Woods theme from Zelda 3. So forth. It's nice. It's like all these little sort of underrepresented pieces that wouldn't stand on their own, but hearing them just momentarily, again, there's enough familiar there that I guess maybe that's what makes these medleys work. Not that it's necessarily a brilliant arrangement, but it's like the sting of familiarity.
You recognize this song, and I've never heard it played with an orchestra, so I appreciate this, yeah.
I feel like probably the best arrangement on the entire concert album is the Hyrule Field arrangement, which does a great job of capturing Ocarina of Time's Hyrule Field theme and the different states that it encompasses,
yeah.
the dynamic arrangements, the
fighting,
enemy themes,
yeah.
And the morning, the sort of dawn twinkle where it's soft flutes kind of saying, hey, a new day has begun. They do a really good job of capturing all the different facets of Hyrule Field.
I think so too. Yeah, that's also a very long song, and it's meant to accompany you across a very long journey over that empty field. So they really hit all of the different versions of that for sure throughout their arrangement.
I also really like the Gerudo Valley theme.
Oh yeah,
I did not expect to. I wasn't sure what I expected from that, but it's. The interpretation in this concert feels bigger than the actual in-game theme, if that makes sense. Mm. Much grander.
Yeah.
Grandiose. And, midway through it moves into a bridge section and it's like really sweeping and grand. And I don't associate that with the Gerudo music. I think of that
in
more
the game,
as like kind
yeah.
of subdued and
it's like a guitar and like castanets and stuff
yeah.
like that. It's a very like Spanish style
right.
Like you can see one guy playing a guitar, but they make it into this very sweeping, very epic kind of arrangement, which I like. I mean, I like both versions, and this is another song that everyone remixes all the time, but there's a reason, and it's a great song.
Right, and this is an arrangement that I haven't heard before, so it's exciting to hear this very familiar music, this very kind of played out music in a way that is different than what's expected. And then finally, I said that, you know, the main theme is a really kind of poor arrangement to end the concert. But the track immediately before that, in between the Great Fairy theme and the main theme, is the Twilight Princess medley, which is by far the most like varied and wide-ranging set of music. And I don't remember Twilight Princess's music that well. It's been, you know, 10 years since
I
played
either,
it.
Really.
But, you know, just listening to this – to this album, even though it doesn't necessarily take me back to playing that game. Like, this is a great arrangement, just a great piece of music on its own, and it's about 11 minutes long. So there's plenty of meat to it.
It's a hard game to go back to, I think, especially after Breath of the Wild, which is the polar opposite of game design. But I feel like there are great elements of that game. But the music definitely, I love that medley. It's like it's music I don't remember, but when I hear it again, I'm like, oh, that was good. That was pretty good.
So did you have any final thoughts on this CD? I don't know if there's necessarily too much more to say about it, but it's, you know, it's familiar music and a few little surprises that I think are done pretty well, although
yeah.
I think there is more space for adventurous arrangements with Zelda that this album doesn't really get to.
I was listening to this while I was working this morning on notes, and I don't remember if there was any Majora's Mask content on this, was there?
There probably is some in one of the medleys,
like
but
the
I don't know Majora's,
theme,
Majora's music.
I couldn't remember.
Well.
I mean, there's also not a lot of music in Majora's Mask, but I feel like that game should be given more credit in general, and I think we've come around on it. But it's a good mix of Zelda songs, and I feel like they hit everything they need to, and the different medleys are full of like lots of music you don't really expect to hear arranged for an orchestra, and there's some surprises in there too. So again, I take this for granted because I've heard a lot of this before orchestrated and I've been to two concerts. I'm a spoiled baby, but this is still worth it if you haven't heard a lot of this, or even if you have, it's just nice to have these all in one collection.
So yeah, you can pick this album up on Amazon and probably a few other places, but it's like $35 on Amazon for two CDs. So not cheap, but also considering it's an import CD, pretty reasonable. Japanese CDs can be pretty expensive. It's called the Legend of Zelda 30th Anniversary Concert CD, and just came out, I think, last week or maybe the week before. So, you know, if you're hankering for some orchestrated Zelda, you're in the mood for some Zelda music after playing Breath of the Wild, there you go. Because there sure isn't much music in Breath of the Wild. So
not really.
If you need something to accompany you as you run around in the wilderness, there you go.
You hear some piano tinklings as you approach something. That's basically it. But I like it because it's like, I don't feel bad about listening to podcasts while I play a game now. It's just, you're giving me space for that. Thank you.
Link is actually listening to podcasts as he explores.
The all-new Toyota RAV4 asks, what if? What if your ride was refined and rugged at the same time? Introducing a car that's got style and substance to spare. The all-new RAV4 Limited. Featuring a sophisticated, muscular new exterior and available options like a premium JBL audio system and panoramic roof. The all-new RAV4 Limited. Toyota. Let's go places. JBL and Clarifier registered trademarks of Harman International Industries Incorporated.
I'm Rob Cesternino, the aptly named Rob Has a Podcast, where we're creating a fun, smart conversation around reality TV games like Survivor. And this March, Survivor Game Changers is finally here. Join me weekdays for episode recaps, player interviews, and of course, your feedback. So if you're ready for a game change in your own Survivor experience, download Rob Has a Podcast at podcastone.com on the Podcast One app or subscribe on iTunes.
All right, so that was pretty much it for notable releases this month. I guess I could have gone into Shovel Knight since that came out on vinyl.
Oh,
and
somebody very
technically old, but feels it.
A very important games writer wrote the liner notes for that.
That's true.
Me, actually, I'm being self-effacing. I don't think of myself in those terms, but I did write the liner note essay to Shovel Knight for Brave Wave. So check that out and tell me if you like it.
Yeah, I'll tackle that next month in Retronauts Radio. Just didn't have a chance to listen to it or read the liner notes for this episode. So with no other notable releases to look forward to this month, next month we'll have Snatcher and Thunder Force 2 or Thunder Blade. Yes, Thunder Blade, Galaxy Force 2, that's it, and a few others. So without that to look forward to, I thought it would be interesting to kind of build on the recent Wii episode of Retronauts and also a recent Nintendo stream that I put together and talk about the really interesting sort of history and little corner of Nintendo history that is their incidental music. And by that, I mean not music that you play – that you hear when you're playing a game, but music that accompanies things like menus for systems or console BIOSes or, you know, applications or just, you know, system channels on the Wii. This is something that I think most people take for granted. Most game consoles, actually no game consoles aside from Nintendo's, I would say really have anything interesting in terms of music, like for their shop or for their like their main menu. I mean, Vita has just like sound and yeah, there's just none of that. Like it's this weird thing Nintendo does. They put a lot of love and care into this incidental music.
But the Switch does not have this, correct?
It's very disappointing,
yeah. I was seeing the eShop and Henry Gilbert, frequent co-host, my coworker, was disappointed there was no eShop music. We were used to that for 10 years, this jaunty little like elevator music to accompany with your purchases.
Yeah, it's a really strange choice Nintendo made with this system. Or maybe not strange. Maybe they're trying to set it apart from the Wii family and the NES family and give you a more mature experience, you know, like everyone else does. You don't hear music when you browse the iTunes store unless you're, you know, sampling music. So I guess maybe that's what they're going for, but it is kind of a letdown. So I guess, you know, this also serves as sort of a like a look back now that this era of Nintendo appears to be over, a chance to go back and enjoy the music. I will say that Switch does have some pretty good music. I think it was when you set up the system or maybe when you're putting together a Mii. But that's about it. Otherwise, like the eShop and the menu, it's just quiet. I don't know. Maybe that's because it's portable. But no, 3DS has good music in its systems. So I have no idea.
Interesting. Maybe they'll patch that in with Virtual Console in the fantasy world we want to live in. Who knows?
But I feel like you can go back all the way 30 years with Nintendo's incidental music to the Famicom disk system. There wasn't a lot of music with the disk system, which of course was an add-on that was attached only to the Japanese version of the NES, the Famicom. And when you first boot that up, there's this really great little ditty.
It It sounds sort of like a superhero theme, like a superhero is about to take off or they just got changed or something into their costume.
So, yeah.
It reminds me of just like it's just rising, you know. Mm-hmm. And isn't Mario like chasing Luigi around on that screen?
Well, what happens is when you play the music and you hear the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, like there's the Famicom Disk System logo rises from nowhere.
Right.
And then after that it's silence. And then, yeah, Mario and Luigi kind of like have this little fight where they're trying to change the color of the logo. So it's just kind of a little incidental detail that you see at boot up, and you won't actually see Mario and Luigi interacting if you have a diskette in the system. That's just kind of like an idle animation while it's waiting for you to insert a diskette. But that is kind of this iconic thing for Japanese Nintendo fans. I don't think Americans have any nostalgia for it unless they happen to import a system, which wasn't really that common back in the 80s. But you know, for people who grew up playing disk system, that you heard that every time you started up a new game, and it's every bit as memorable as the chunk of putting the disk in or the k-dunk, k-dunk, k-dunk. Oh, my disk error.
The rubber band broke.
So yeah, I think the first time Nintendo really went kind of all in on system music, I'm going to jump around in the notes here, Bob.
Oh, sure.
Was in 1990, I want to say, 3 with Mario Paint.
Oh, yeah. I played a hell of a lot of this because computers were still unaffordable for an upper, lower, middle class family. And this was the solution. And it was also sort of like, we're going to teach your kids how to use a mouse, you know.
Yeah. So tell us about Mario Paint.
It was sort of a it was a creativity app. It was a suite of creation tools. In that, very much like R&D1 in their style, the act of creating was – even that was very toy-like. Like everything was – the interacting with this program was fun in and of itself. Like everything made a noise when you clicked on it. It was just trying to make you know, the act of like very basic MS Paint style drawing, very basic animation suites, very basic music composition as fun as possible with the limitations of a Super Nintendo in 1993. And I loved it.
Yeah, I think this the entirety of Mario Paint really kind of defines Nintendo's approach to things that could be very boring because you have a paint app. And this was not the first paint application for a game system by any means.
Right.
They were on computers. I think there were some – yeah, there was like the Tiny Toons Cartoon Studio for NES.
A few years before
Color
that.
Color a Dinosaur. But Nintendo made theirs fun. They turned it into a game. Like there's even a little gnat game, like you're swatting bugs.
And like everything, every tool makes a different noise. There's a lot of feedback that makes everything fun to use. Like every different stamp makes a noise. Every different kind of drawing implement makes a different noise. Like they were very, very careful in making sure everything was just fun to poke at in this program.
And the music of the system or of the game, like the app, the cartridge, was a big part of that. It helped give the whole thing personality. The composers for the Mario Paint music were – there were three of them. Hirokazu Hip Tanaka, Ryoji Yoshitomi, and Kazumi Totaka. And I think probably – Hip Tanaka is probably the best known, but Totaka has sort of this this legacy of this kind of habit he has of integrating this little medley or melody that he created into pretty much every soundtrack he works on. I think there are a few that don't have it, but this was the second time that he used what is now known as Totaka's song. The first time was in X for Game Boy, like hidden in there. But here it's the title screen. When you start up Mario Paint, you hear Totaka's song. But that was not the only memorable music in Mario Paint by any means. And there's a lot of music, but the two that kind of stand out most to me is the first is the creative exercise, which you hear when you're, you know, kind of painting. This has that kind of At first, I thought this was a Soya Oko Oka composition because it has that sort of like slightly flat, slightly out of tune sound that some of Nintendo's compositions for Super NES did. But apparently, it's just maybe it's just the instruments they were using, the samples. But this is a, like an almost kind of goofy and comical piece of music. And it sounds a little bit out of tune, but it kind of comes together as it develops. And by the end of it, it's actually pretty rousing.
It is. It feels like it kind of feels like a, almost like game show music by the end, the way it's like a little cheesy, I think. It's fun in a cheesy way. I feel like the best thing I can say about some of this music is that it's sort of like elevator music, or it's sort of like I think The Sims did a good job of making like very fun takes on Americana music, things you would hear in the background of like Ren and Stimpy episodes. Like that's what it reminds me of, really, like this like 60s cocktail party kind of thing you drop on in the background.
And sort of speaking of 60s style music, the Nat Attack minigame music is like jazzy spy music. It sounds like, you know, Man from U.N.C.L.E. or, I don't know, Mission Impossible or something. It's very Peter Gunn. It's very kind of retro. And it's not what I would think, like, this is the music for killing bugs, but it works.
Tanaka would do Earthbound with the other guy.
Keiichi Suzuki.
There you go. Sorry, I always forget his name. And this, the creative use of samples and the odd choices really remind me of what we would see later in Earthbound, which would be like maybe a year after this in Japan. So I feel like there's some ties to Earthbound in here as well.
So a few years after that, I'm not sure exactly what the timeline was on this, but kind of around the same time, Nintendo created something called Nintendo Power. And this was not the magazine that we had in America. It was
That's always confused me.
Yeah. It's really hard to find information on this, like when you do Google searches.
Yes, because, disambiguation.
Yes, because Nintendo Power is a magazine, but it's also a series of flash cartridges that Nintendo published in Japan where you could take a blank cartridge for Game Boy or Super Famicom to a convenience store and plug it into a media writer, a kiosk, and copy games like at a very inexpensive price, like 500 yen or something, $5, and copy those games to the flash cartridge, and they would be yours to play and keep until you wanted to overwrite them. And like, okay, that's fine. You have video games in here. But the really crazy thing about this, I bought one of these when I was in Japan last month and, you know, kind of did my very first playthrough of it or messing around with it for the first time on a Nintendo stream. And like everyone else watching the stream, I was taken aback by the fact that the menu music is really good.
Hmm.
It's like, why is the menu music for this flash cartridge application so good?
No one would have really cared, I guess. But it's that extra touch, I think, that I don't know. In these shop menu things and these kind of menus, I feel like they want to make you feel good about what you're doing, or at least I don't know, make it less bland and less practical than it could be, I think.
Yeah, this music piece reminds me almost of Streets of Rage's music. Like it has a very Yuzo Koshiro kind of sound to it, which is great. Mm. It's not really what I associate with Nintendo, but it's certainly not what I would think of, you know, for selecting a video game from a menu.
Yeah.
But it's great. I really love it. And sometime around this, I don't know, like I said, the timeline, but Nintendo also released something called the BSX Satellaview, which was kind of like the what was that called for Sega?
Sega Channel.
Yes, the Sega Channel. Or the other one that was on both Super NES and Sega. God, I can't remember the name. Basically, it was a satellite TV service, and you could subscribe to it, and you had a special attachment for your Super Famicom, Super NES, and it was only in Japan, of course. And you could plug in one of these flash cartridges, and download games specifically for the BSX Satellaview service. You could also play live games that were like a limited time experience, such as the BSX Zelda, where you were like basically you would tune in at a certain time each day and there would be someone giving you live navigation through.
Yeah, this feels like so Japanese, but it was these radio kind of radio style radio play things you would tune into with narration, and they would give you different goals to meet, I think, with every episode. And I don't know if those were ever recorded or anything like that or saved in any way, but it feels like so ephemeral, that kind of functionality that it had.
Yeah, and the Satellaview was the source of some really interesting games, such as Radical Dreamers.
Oh yeah, that's right.
The original sequel to Chrono Trigger, which kind of was rebuilt into Chrono Cross.
For sure.
But it was more of a graphical adventure as opposed to – or even a visual novel as opposed to an RPG. But anyway, the Satellaview had BIOS music, you know, like a – you know, sort of a main system music, and it's really, really good. There was actually – several pieces of music composed for it.
Hmm.
The main menu, the error screen, music that you play when you're downloading software. And there's a lot of variety to it. And it's all kind of different pieces, you know, different genres and styles. Like every piece of it sounds great too. The main menu has kind of an ethereal feel to it.
It does feel like welcome to the future. This is the future of games.
Yeah, it's kind of you're echoey walking into the future. And spacey. But it's very, you know, sort of relaxing. It is sort of what you would think of as menu music. But then the error screen music, I guess, you know, you usually think of like error screens as very frustrating and like, ah, oh, damn it, I had a, you know, an error with my system. I couldn't download the game. So maybe to counterbalance that, the error system or the error screen music for the BSX Satellaview is really kind of relaxing. Like I could just listen to this and kind of peace out.
So you don't throw your Super Famicom through your TV.
Right. And then the download music that played while you downloaded games, which I'm sure probably took a while because this was not exactly fiber internet. It varied from – like there's one piece that's basically a soft waltz. There's another that's player piano ragtime music, very upbeat. And then finally, I think my favorite might be this jazzy piece that wouldn't sound out of place in a Mario Kart game. Like you could hear it on a Super Mario Kart track and be like, yes, that belongs there.
And there's no way to find out who actually composed this, I'm guessing. It's not like... Where would the credit go on this?
Well, actually, the Video Game Music Preservation Foundation.
Oh, very good.
I'm glad you asked this because I did look it up and I tried to find composers for all these and it wasn't always easy. But in this case, VGMPF cites
Akito Nakatsuka.
Yes. Okay. Nakatsuka.
Nakatsuka. That's it. That's better.
Okay, yes. Cites Akito Nakatsuka.
Akito Nakatsuka.
Yes, great. Way to go, Bob. Thank you.
Japanese pronunciation.
It's rough.
For the win.
All right. Anyway, Nakatsuka-san did fantastic music. It's all very good. And it makes me sad that we didn't get the BSX at all.
Did this person do anything else?
Yes, actually. You can check his page at the Video Game Music Preservation Foundation, and he's He's got a lot of credits to his name. But I didn't bother to write down any of those things.
I'm sorry.
Sorry about that.
It's okay.
So finally, the first one that we actually did get here in America besides Mario Paint, the first like system kind of thing, was the Game Boy Camera. And the Game Boy Camera is interesting because not only was the music composed by Hip Tanaka, but the entire product was designed by Hip Tanaka. It was his creation. It was his baby.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised to hear that. Like, I knew he had worked on it, but I interviewed him several years ago, and he was like, "Oh yeah, that was me. I made
it." It's weird you don't really associate him with hardware, even though he did compose like the Gyromite songs and things like that. He was just working on the games.
Yeah, and this one's interesting because one, you know, we got the Game Boy Camera in America, so it's something many people listening to this have heard. But also, it's one of Tanaka's final projects for Nintendo before he left work on composing for the Pokemon anime.
Wait,
he's like the boss of Creatures.
Creatures Inc. Yeah, mm-hmm. We discussed this. There's like five different Pokemon companies, all very confusing. It's all in our Pokemon episode.
The Game Boy Camera is interesting because the music is really different from everything we've heard so far. Like everything that we've talked about so far has been like very rich, developed compositions, and everything on the Game Boy Camera is very – it's kind of hard to listen to. It's really strange. Like when you first turn it on, it immediately jumps into the title screen and has this weird sort of like dancing photograph of a guy dressed as Mario hopping up and down. The music is very discordant. It's strident beeping sounds. It's hard to listen to, and that's kind of the theme throughout this entire thing. Yeah, like especially the doodle theme for the like when you can vandalize photographs. It's extremely harsh and sounds very sort of like almost repellent.
Maybe it's sort of underlining like you're committing a crime. You're drawing on these pictures.
I think so. Yeah. Like the idea is that you're taking people's images. You know, you take a photo of someone's face and then you vandalize it. So there's kind of like this musical undercurrent of like you are a bad person for doing this. Another interesting thing is that the shooting mode for Game Boy Camera, when you're given the menu for it, there's always like this kind of doe-eyed girl like looking at you. But then there's a menu underneath that it's like an RPG menu. It has like shoot, item, run. And the only one that really works is shoot, well, and view. But because it has this RPG presentation, the music also has this kind of RPG sort of style. It has a few different tunes depending on where you are in the photo process, but there's like this sort of dreamlike loop that you get when you first bring up the camera menu. There's also a lullaby. And then when you're viewing photos, the kind of viewing that you're undertaking, whether it's like looking at an individual shot or looking at an album or looking at a slideshow, each of those you know, menu options has its own style of music. Like the slideshow is a riff on the Nutcracker Suite. The whole thing is just weird, but it fits with the Game Boy Camera because the Game Boy Camera is weird. There's a lot of weirdness in it, like the mini games and the shooting games, and you know, this the kind of vibe that you get from the Game Boy camera was very much Nintendo R&D 1, and you see a lot of it in the Wario games, especially Wario Land Advance and then Rhythm Heaven. Like, this is the DNA for all of that. All of those things
that
would come to define the later work of EAD – or R&D 1, it's right here.
Yeah. They could have just made it a simple camera – a quote-unquote app, but it's like, no, we want to make interacting with this fun and toy-like because we are Nintendo, we are R&D1, and that is our thing that we do.
So the next thing that Nintendo released that kind of – at least that I'm aware of that sort of made use of their interesting approach to music was Mario Artist, which was a series of Nintendo 64 DD discs that only worked with the 64 DD disc attachment that came out in Japan. And this was meant as a sort of follow-up to Mario Paint.
Yeah, and actually I'm learning through research in the past episodes we've done that Mario Artist is like – has the roots of some very interesting things. Like the Suite is also the prototype for WarioWare basically came out of it. And also I learned through our Wii episode that there was going to be – there is Talent Studio, but part of it was going to be a sort of Mii-like approach where you – I guess there was a – was there a camera for the 64 or something?
I don't believe so, but maybe you could use the Game Boy camera because it did have that attachment for transferring Game Boy data to Pokemon Stadium.
There was something they were going to do where you were going to paste your face on these like Kokeshi dolls, which exactly look like Mii's, like little dolls with round heads, but they couldn't figure out anything to do with them outside of that. But they moved on to become Mii's in the Wii menu. So yeah, that a lot of interesting things came out of this Mario Paint sequel that we never saw.
And Mario Artist's main composer was again Kazumi Totaka. With a company meant by Kenta Nagata and Toru Minegishi.
Yeah, they accompanied.
Whom I know.
You don't know them?
No, I don't.
Okay, I'm not judging you, but I just was looking up these guys because of different things I've been doing. But Kenta Nagata, Mario Kart 64 composer, but both he and Toru Minegishi accompanied Koji Kondo on the Wind Waker soundtrack. That's right.
Okay.
I think that was the first Zelda soundtrack that was not just Koji Kondo on his own. So they helped make that soundtrack great, those two guys.
So yeah, there were a couple of different applications released under the Mario Artist series. One of them was Talent Studio, which was basically like composing stuff, like a music composition. And I think you could make movies. I don't know. I've never used it. If Chris Kohler were here, I'm sure he has it and can tell us about it. But the music is great. Like the Talent Studio menu, it almost sounds like a scratch attempt at creating some of the animal voices in Animal Crossing.
Hmm.
Like it's this kind of discordant and weird music, and there's this sort of gravelly, sampled nonsense voice that's singing or talking along with it. It's really hard to describe. Fortunately, I don't have to. You can just listen to it. But there's definitely this like... it definitely has that Animal Crossing babble voice feel.
Yeah, I mean, I think Animal Crossing might have predated this because the DD released in like, what, December of 2000? I think Animal Crossing was a spring 2000 game in Japan maybe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I remember that because it's like it predates The Sims, I think, by like a month or two.
Right.
There's an interesting story there. But maybe they sort of were developing that tech at the same time. I don't know.
Probably so, because Totaka, of course, worked on Animal Crossing's
music.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's a dog.
He is KK Slider. The animation lab is great. Like, I love when Nintendo gets weird with its music, and the animation lab's music is very weird. It's this very chill drum loop, and playing over top of it, there's a stuttered, sampled, distorted voice saying, "Animation." I assume it's Totaka's voice, but who knows?
Yeah.
Animation. Like he does voice games sometimes. Like he's been Yoshi's voice before.
That's right. No, he is Yoshi's voice. I think definitively.
Oh, definitively.
Okay, yeah, I think that they just use those samples, or they got him to record better ones. I don't know, but yeah.
But yeah, it's got kind of like a Max Headroom-ish quality to it over this very like very very low key electronic, you know, drum sound. But then on the other hand, you have the Paint Studio app, which the title screen sounds more like something from Jet Set Radio. It's got like this very energetic sort of distorted sampled funk guitar. And it sounds very, very Jet Set Radio until the part where the steel drum kicks in, and then it's like its own thing. It's a really lengthy composition, much more so than the Talent Studio menu, and it goes for a long time. I guess because, you know, Paint, you're going to be spending a lot of time just sort of looking at systems and stuff. I don't know. And you see that sort of that lengthy loop approach in the Piano Studio drawing tracks. There's one of them that's like the main drawing track is an electronic piano or some clavier sound. It's very sort of muted and soft and, you know, eventually there's some synthesizers, but it actually takes a minute of this sort of loop for a melody to sort of come into being. And it all kind of builds slowly. So it's very relaxing, very kind of new age.
Helps you concentrate, I think, on drawing.
On the other hand, there's another music tune that's like super upbeat and jaunty and has samples of monkeys screeching.
Huh.
So it's like the opposite. It's actually kind of jarring and weird. Then a third piece of music is it's basically it sounds like them kind of channeling Philip Glass, like the Koyaanisqatsi Scotty soundtrack. It's very sustained organ chords, and it's sort of like a mid-tone and then an undertone, like a deeper tone, and then a rhythm builds up of these tones, almost like a loop or a reverb.
It's music from the hearts of space.
And then on top of that, there's a melody that actually starts to sort of coalesce around 30 seconds in, and then that takes about a minute to actually really reach a crescendo. So it's, you know, very like sort of slow, deliberate music for a video game, and it takes a while to get going somewhere, but it's very satisfying when it finally does. Once the 64 died off and the 64DD, Nintendo moved along to the GameCube, and there weren't a lot of apps for the GameCube, but the GameCube operating system did have music, and you might not even have recognized it as such, but if you play it really fast, something interesting happens. Are you aware of this, Bob?
Oh, yeah. I think okay. Who broke this? Was this recent news? I think
no,
it was.
It's been around for a while.
Okay. I thought it was like within the past 5 years. But
maybe within like the past five
yeah,
years.
Yeah. But there's no real reason for you to really visit that menu ever. I feel like I maybe did it twice in my lifetime. But yeah, that is what is that? Is that the disk system theme?
It's the like disk slow system
down?
Jingle.
Yeah.
Slow down to like 1/16th speed or something.
But I will tell you that the GameCube jingle of the, you know, the cube unrolling and then hitting the middle with that like orchestra hit, that is now a meme. I've seen so many memes where it'll play the GameCube thing and the orchestra hit will be like somebody falling over or somebody getting punched or something. I've seen so many different
like
versions
Richard
of that.
Spencer getting
yes,
punched.
I've seen that version of nice. The GameCube intro. But and I think something happens if you hold in Z on all four controllers, it does something to alter that. I think it's like a sumo scream or something like that. It does something different. I think I did it once, but yeah, like weird little tricks like that to it.
I know if you hold down B, it'll go into progressive output mode.
Oh, but no music.
No music. Around the same time as the GameCube's launch, Nintendo created the e-reader for Game Boy Advance.
Ooh.
And this was a weird little device. This did come to the U.S., and only weirdos like me bought it. I was like, yay, I can finally play Urban Champion on my Game Boy Advance because I hate life. But the e-reader was it had a lot of cards that were not specifically game applications, and some of them were, you know, like Pokemon viewing cards. And some of these cards had music. Like I think there was music built into the system because there's way too much music to come off of a card. So this was like some sort of system level music that only played when you activated certain things. But this music is great. I mean, it's like super kind of techie and energetic. It's a pretty short loop, but it's really intense and very energetic considering it goes to a goofy peripheral that reads paper cards.
Yeah. The only thing I think I missed out on with these is whatever Super Mario Advance was Super Mario Brothers 3, which I think is like Super Mario Advance 4. Which one is it? Super Mario 3 is Super Mario Advance 4.
Yeah, Advance 4, yep.
There was DLC, quote unquote, with the paper cards, and it was like really wacky. Like you can pick up vegetables now, and there's like remixed levels, and these were all on maybe randomized paper cards. I don't know how they sold them, but this was e-reader. You could not get these levels without the e-reader attachment at all, ever. And maybe you can download a ROM where those are like hacked in or something?
No. Actually, there was a set that was sold at Walmart.
Oh.
It was like Walmart exclusive. But you can access those if you get Super Mario Brothers Advance 4 on Wii U Virtual Console. It has the e-reader levels
I didn't know
built
this.
Into it.
Okay. I'm going to have to buy that now.
Like
I'm sure they're not good. Or as good as the original, because how could they be? But it's just seeing things added to this game is a novelty to me, so I want to see
it. It's kind of like an early taste of Mario Maker, actually. There's like some crazy weird levels that do stuff like make use of Kuriboshu, things that you never saw in other official Mario game designs. And Mario Advance 3 or 4 was developed by Nintendo, the group that used to be R&D4, I think. I can't remember what the name of the division is now, but it's the people who went on to make new Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, really?
They basically, like they did Super Mario Brothers Deluxe for Game Boy Color. Then they made the Advance games. I think Tosei might have helped make the like.
I wasn't sure if it was all Tosei,
but their people were involved. And then after sort of getting back into the swing of things with the Game Boy Advance games, they were like, "All right, let's make a new actual Mario game for DS." Yeah, that's probably the most interesting thing about the Game Boy Advance e-reader. So after that, we get into the more contemporary consoles, Wii, 3DS, Wii U. Bob, you want to take away on Wii since you put together that
sure.
episode? I'm sure this has been on your mind a lot.
I mean, some of these channels I never visited because why? Who cares? But because by the time I got a Wii, it was after the invention of smartphones and I didn't need to look at my Wii to know what the weather was. But the shop channel definitely is something I visited a lot and heard the music on a lot because it took forever to load. And it does feel like – it feels like almost like a parody of elevator, like, I don't know, like in – I don't know where this music came from, but it's not elevator music, but it's like the soothing shopping music you would hear. It's just very cheesy and very like – I don't know. But it's kind of things – the kind of thing I heard in The Sims where it was – it felt like a parody of elevator music or like a parody of that kind of jaunty shopping music.
I feel like it's a like a sort of robot version of the girl from Ipanema.
Walking, and when she passes, each one she passes goes, ah. When she walks, she's like a samba that swings so cool and sways so gently.
It kind of sounds like that. I'm sad you didn't play the second Mario Paint song because it does sound like Feliz Navidad after a point.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, but no, I can kind of hear that in here, but I do like how it starts like dun 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 dun, and then it goes into the.
You just triggered me, man. That is the music of my nightmares.
Because you spent so much money on Virtual Console, yeah.
So much time just sitting, waiting, watching. Mario would run past.
Yeah.
Then Mario would
no coins this
go
time.
Fast, faster. Then Mario would swim past. Like there were actually lots of different animations.
It would be Luigi sometimes.
Downloading a long time, yeah. What about the Weather Channel? I never used the Weather Channel, but
I think on the
it's really nice music.
I think on the Wii episode, actually, I went out on the Nighttime Weather Channel because there was a day and night theme, which is really cool. I liked how it was, you know, time sensitive to which one, but the night theme is a very soothing acoustic guitar song. It reminds me of the song that plays when you end SimCity for the SNES. It plays this very soothing song, and the moon is falling asleep and is blowing a star into the sky. It's very nice. I like it.
I like the daytime music, which is like this kind of woodwinds and tuned percussion, maybe like a glockenspiel or xylophone, and there's plucked strings underneath, kind of like pizzicato or, violin. It's very nice. It's very, very mellow. Nintendo's so good at this.
Yeah.
Then there's the photo channel, which I never used the photo channel. So when
no,
I was listening
I didn't
to the music,
either.
I was like, is this really the photo channel music? Because it starts out, it's just like piano, and it's a pretty simple composition, but pretty quickly it builds up, and it's kind of forceful and aggressive.
Maybe like that's for if you have a bad vacation.
I guess, but I feel like the, you know, this is supposed to be sort of a digital picture frame, and it's supposed to be very just like static and relaxing, and the music is just a little too edgy for that to work. So it's a really weird choice. I would like to know the explanation for that. I know there's a lot of thinking that went into the photo channel, but
yeah,
did they talk about the music in Iwata Asks?
No, but there are like 3 pages of discussion about the photo channel in that Iwata Asks. So there's more than you ever needed to know, but not anything about the music.
And then finally, the Wii also had the Everybody Votes music, which is great. It sounds like it's got like drum machines and has this very 80s soul pop feel to it, like, you know, Beat It era Michael Jackson. Like I could really see Nintendo having borrowed this from Quincy Jones or something. Like.
I did enjoy it when I was voting for pizza versus hamburgers in 2008. It really helped me make a decision. Yeah.
And finally, 3DS and Wii U. Not too much there to talk about. The shop on 3DS is it starts out with just kind of like effects and like like jingles and ringing, but it does eventually kind of form into music, and it's much more soothing than the Wii Shop music. Do much shopping on 3DS?
I do, but I don't think I have the sound on when I'm shopping, because it's just like, why do I need the sound on? I'm not actually playing a game. But I'll take your word for it. I did listen to it. I was like, oh, I've never heard this before. That's interesting.
Weird.
It doesn't start off as jarring as the Wii Shop, that's for sure. Or as like intense, you know, just like the staccato hits.
Yeah, it's more like wind chimes or something. But I bet you have heard the Mii music on 3DS.
Is that the bum 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 bum?
Yeah, it's basically it's a different arrangement of that music. Like that's the Mii Plaza.
The Mii Plaza,
music.
Yeah.
But that appears in different forms throughout. So if you've done the mini games, the Street Pass games, you have heard the Mii music in some form. Like it gets used a lot.
Yeah, and as you get more people in your plaza, which I think maxes out at 3,000 in terms of what will change, you get like more instruments added to that arrangement of the plaza music. Yeah,
I maxed out so
bombastic.
Long ago.
Yeah, that's all you've
known. All I get is the bombast. Finally, the Wii U, which I guess is the end of the legacy for Nintendo's system music. The home menu, when you just have the system on, is it's almost not music. It's just like kind of
like bum 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 bum.
Yeah, it's just like long airy chords.
It's like digital, kind of like digital wind chimes. I don't know. It just feels like it's soothing, and I kind of miss that with the death of the Wii U. I sort of just would like turn it on and go do something, and it would be fine to leave on in the background because it was soothing.
Right. It had all those little sound effects that went with it. That was another kind of one of those sound design things. You had the sound of the Miis tromping up the screen, and you had the little voices of the Miis being like,
yeah,
kind of sound like Pikmin or
and Reggie would be in the crowd trying to tell you about something like there's
buy
new
Star
games
Fox
I swear.
Zero. No, you can't make me. And then finally, the Mii Maker music is nothing at all like the Wii Mii Maker
this
music.
This is so foreign to me. I made a total of one Mii in my life, and that was the one of me, and that was done because by 2008, the novelty of making Miis had ended. We've made every Hitler and Jesus and Hank Hill there is, and I think it was over.
Yeah, it's very different than the 3DS Mii music. It's very – has kind of like an open sound is how I would describe it. The tempo is the same as the home music, and it actually goes on for quite a while before it loops.
Hmm.
So I guess they really expected you to sink some time into making Miis.
This is still exciting, everybody.
Another misjudgment on behalf of Nintendo with the Wii.
I still love it. It's my special
Wii
baby.
So I do have a little bit of reader music before we – or listener – Reader music.
Reader music.
Read music, yes. Listener mail before we move along. Let's see if there's anything. Nope. Here's one from George Stroff. Nintendo has had a lot of really good system music over the years. Even the Famicom Disk System had its own quite good boot theme. My personal favorite is the Elegance from the Hanafuda 3DS theme that was given out at Club Nintendo at the end of its life. Man, I've never heard that
one. I haven't either.
I'm a big fan of how they've been switching out the Wii U eShop music every few months, sometimes to a track from whatever game has just released, but usually to a completely original track. All the original tracks ones are worth checking out, but I think my favorite of them all is this one. Another neat thing is how a couple of the Wii U system themes have two different variations that play at the same time, one on the TV and one on the gamepad.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It never quite sounded right to me due to a slight HDMI audio delay on my TV, but the idea was fun.
Wow, that is pretty interesting. Yeah, I have to try that out.
Usually I have the audio off on my gamepad if I'm on TV.
Same here.
John Barnes says, I'm sure this will be first among the first things you touch on, but just in case, here's the GameCube music sped up. Yeah. I was delighted when the PictoChat stage was revealed for Super Smash Bros. Brawl and had the Wii Shop channel music as one of the available music tracks.
Right. I can't imagine
fighting
to that. PictoChat
didn't have music, did it?
It didn't, no, okay. But the stage was pretty fun.
Yeah. Nintendo may have made a few baffling or short-sighted decisions with regards to its digital offerings on Wii, including certain aspects of the shop channel itself, but that cheery music and download progress being represented by Mario collecting coins made the experience better than using its competitor stores online or competitors' online stores 99% of the time, which isn't saying much when one of them is PSN, but still. Sure, it's psychological window dressing to loosen your wallet, but it's fun all the same. The fact that the song made it into Smash Brothers is further testament to Nintendo's playful attitude toward everything they make. All right. So anyway, yeah, that's our listener mail section. I hope you have enjoyed that. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Bob, it was nice having you on a Retronauts Radio.
Sure. This is going to be a long one because we've talked – our recording of us talking is an hour long, and that's before any music is added.
Whoops.
So this could be two episodes. I don't know. I'll leave it up to you.
It'll be one.
Okay.
Unless I run
super
out of time editing tomorrow. But that's good. I'm glad we had that much to say.
Yep. I had a lot to say. And I really miss the era of Nintendo system music. I think it's over now. It's like, no, we've grown up. You get no music. I'm an adult now.
I'm hoping they added in a system update to the Switch. But
that would
we'll
be
see.
Great. Yeah.
There's a lot of things Switch is missing right now. Now feels like this system should have launched in about 6 months.
It's a soft launch.
Yeah, very soft.
But, I'm going to buy it when it's a hard launch.
I would recommend waiting. You've got Zelda on Wii U, so that's all you need. Anyway,
it looks fine.
So that was it for the third episode of Retronauts Radio. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in a month with Shovel Knight, Snatcher, Galaxy Force 2, probably some other stuff. There's a lot coming out, so it's a lot to look forward to. And so that'll be 4 weeks from now. In the meantime, you can follow us now in the here and now on iTunes at retronauts.com. You can support us through Patreon because that's part of our business model, the kindness of strangers. And of course, like I said, retronauts.com will soon become a real website like Pinocchio became a real boy, except I'm hoping we will not lie as much. Bob, tell us about yourself. Where can
we
find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. I'm also a writer for Fandom, writing video game content at fandom.com. Go there for my stuff on video games. And I also write a comedy article every other Thursday for Something Awful, as I have done for the past 12 years. In case you didn't know that about me, I do that as well. And my other podcast is Talking Simpsons every Wednesday on the every Wednesday on the Laser Time Podcast Network. We're an hour like nine of recording, by the way. But
yeah,
yes,
this has been a long weekend.
Go to TalkingSimpsons.com. Every episode is a new episode of The Simpsons. We explore in excruciating detail. When this launches, this episode you're listening to now, we will be in season 5. And we have almost 100 episodes for you to go back and enjoy. If you're trying to get into the show, pick an episode of The Simpsons you love and listen to our corresponding episode, and I guarantee you will like our show. So that's every Wednesday, TalkingSimpsons.com, or look for Talking Simpsons in your podcast device. You'll find us there. Thank you.
As for myself, you can find me on Twitter as GameSpite. I create things like Game Boy World and Good Intentions video series, but that's all part of Retronauts, and that's what I do now. Podcasts and website and videos. And I think it's funny that people are always like, man, your life is so like laid back now and you have so much free time. Actually, I'm working harder than ever I have before in my life because I'm building a business. But it's great. It's lots of fun. I've really been enjoying it. I'm grateful for everyone's support and continued patronage, whether through Patreon or just through listening of Retronauts. I hope you continue to enjoy our episodes and will continue to support us. And I will continue to create the best content that I can along with Bob. So thanks again for listening. We'll be back next week with a full episode, I think, Retronauts East. Yes, look forward to that.
all-new Toyota RAV4 asks, what if? What if your ride was refined and rugged at the same time? Introducing a car that's got style and substance to spare. The all-new RAV4 Limited. Featuring a sophisticated, muscular new exterior and available options like a premium JBL audio system and panoramic roof. The all-new RAV4 Limited. Toyota. Let's go places. JBL and Clarifier, registered trademarks of Harman International Industries Incorporated.
The Mueller Report. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. President Trump was asked at the White House if Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation report should be released next week when he will be out of town.
I guess from what I understand, that will be totally up to the Attorney General.
Maine's Susan Collins says she would vote for a congressional resolution disapproving of President Trump's emergency declaration to build a border wall, becoming the first Republican senator to publicly back it. In New York, the wounded supervisor of a police detective killed by friendly fire was among the mourners attending his funeral. Detective Brian Simonson was killed as officers started shooting at a robbery suspect last week. Commissioner James O'Neill was among the speakers today at Simonson's funeral.
It's a tremendous weight to bear, knowing that your choices will directly affect the lives of others. But cops like Brian don't shy away from it. It's the very foundation of who they are and what they do.
The robbery suspect and a man police say acted as his lookout have been charged with murder. I'm Ed Donahue.